Is October 31st, 2022, and we're in the middle of the Satmar. What we finished is the Satmar's famous anti-Zionist stand, which he's most remembered for. And as we said last week, the 67 war caused a groundswell of change among all the Jewish people and the Satmar as well. And he was the first one who came out and published Al HaGula V'Al HaTzmura. Now, what's interesting is we mentioned in our Shiurim that I started working in the encyclopedia in 69, and I worked literally desk to desk with Rabbi Lopin's son-in-law, Rabbi Dov Beryl Klein, Bernard Klein. Bernard Klein was one of the finest gentlemen I ever met in my life, and I recall him so fondly. If you want to know what Mus is all about, you have to meet someone like Bernard Klein. His great nephew or great grandson of Rabbi Lopin wrote to me. And this individual's grandfather was Reb Leib Lopian, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the two Rosh Yeshiva in Gateshead. And he writes about his grandfather, that he never knew his grandfather. His grandfather died before he was born. But he has gone through in the attic his grandfather's Svarim, and among what he found in the attic, he found a copy of the Al HaGula V'Al HaTmura. And he wondered how his grandfather had it. And his grandmother told him that his grandfather, her husband, was in the States for a simcha, and he went to the Satmar Rav to ask him to use his influence on one of his Hasidim, whose son was a promising student in Gateshead Yeshiva. But his father, the Satmar Chassid, insisted in taking him out of yeshiva to help him in the family business. Sadly, the Satmar's answer was approximately, quote, "My siddim ask me about every business deal they do, but when it comes to what I really understand about, they decide in their own and don't care for my opinion." So the Satmarov did not help. In other words, on business deals where he knows next to nothing, they listen. And on chinuch, they don't listen. So it's an interesting comment, and he assumes that the Al HaGula V'Al HaTmura reached his grandfather from this visit to the Satmar Rav. Now, I also want to say, remember this story with the Satmar Rav. We won't come to it today, but we're going to come back to the whole difference between Satmar and Lubavitch. It's a very fascinating material. But after the Six-Day War and after the publication of Al HaGula V'Al HaTmura, and remember it was Rabbi Klein who said to me that, take a look, the Satmar Rav was the first one to publish a book about the Six-Day War with such a negative attitude. And right after the book was published, he suffered a stroke, which incapacitated him for the remaining 10, 11 years of his life. I gave you a long list last week of what came out refuting the Satmar. I'll go one step further today. I'm not really refuting Satmar theology. I'm going to come to that when I'm totally finished with Satmar. And what I intend to do, I challenge the non-Zionist world who care about Torah to prove me wrong. But there is one ultimate abrogation, negation of Satmar. And it's a very important concept which affects all our lives to this very moment. And what I'm referring to, of course, is the Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, Perik Yud Ben Halacha Bet, where the Rambam says there is so much contradiction when you open up Chazal, when you open up the famous 11th chapter in Sanhedrin, so much contradiction. We'll never know what really is going to happen until it happens. And these are the words of the Rambam, and he says, Al kol panim ein sidur havayat avar meidu v'lo diktaku ikar badat and diktakan and believing it happens step one, step two, step three. This is not really basic to our Torah concept. And li olam yitas lo yitasok adam b'divrei hagadot v'lo yarich b'divrei midrashot hamurim b'ninim elu ki yotse b'chem v'lo yasimam ika shel eina meviyim lo lideyava v'lo yideyira. And it's a very powerful concept that when you get up involved in these midrashim, so you can become overwhelmed with Eretz Yisrael and forget about Torah Yisrael, or you can become overwhelmed with Torah Yisrael and forget about Eretz Yisrael. And you know, this was Ben-Gurion's response to the Chazon Ish, when the Chazon Ish, I'm sure you all know this, Ben-Gurion went to meet with the Chazon Ish when there was a tremendous battle going on about the Gius Banot that was shaking the country, demonstrations all over the world against Ben-Gurion and the State of Israel. And Ben-Gurion decided he wanted to meet the Briska Rav. Ben-Gurion was no dope. And he knew that the Briska Rav was perhaps the most authoritative figure in the Torah world. And the Briska Rav refused to meet him. And you all, I trust you're familiar with my Rebbe's Hesped. I actually spoke about it many decades ago in length in class. Mori Rebbe is Hesped for the Briska Rav. He made the point that the Briska Rav had no world outside of Halacha. Couldn't deal with anything that wasn't pure Halacha. And he said, Vaharaya, that when Ben-Gurion wanted to visit him, he couldn't. It's not halacha. The Chazon Ish, on the other hand, the Rav said, Chazon Ish already was more in the greater world, and he received Ben-Gurion. So then there was the famous mashal, if two camels come to a hill, one is laden with luggage, and one has nothing on his back, which camel goes first? And Ben-Gurion said, the Torah world, we carry the tradition of so many thousands of years. Tzionut Chilonit, what tradition does it carry? And we go first. And Ben-Gurion answered that we carry the tradition of Eretz Yisrael, of building the country. He didn't answer like a Lamdan, the Ramban, the Tichishvar, but that's what he's meant in a basic sense. And the Rambam here is very powerful. If you get involved with these midrashim and that midrashim, you have to be balanced. In my days, there was a big debate whether we should call it B'nai Akiva or B'nai Rebbe Akiva. And the truth is, you need both. Torah involves all of life. Not everyone can be a Gadol B'Teira. But the Beis Medrash and learning in Eretz Yisrael and Am Yisrael, it all comes together. But then the Rambam has some shocking words. V'chein lo yachshov hakitzim, that we shouldn't get involved in predicting exactly when Mashiach is going to come. And I get emails, I have to apologize. Yomo can testify, this morning, we must have answered on to 15, 20 different emails. Some of these emails, they think I'm a Rebbe Chassidi, and I have to tell the world I am not a Rebbe Chassidi. I can't give answers to questions I don't know anything about, and I won't give advice to anyone I don't know. Chassidic Rebbe does it, but that's not my cup of tea. But one of the questions I got recently, is it true that the Gaon said in 1948, Mashiach will be here? And there are the cheshbonot, you understand, that were made over the years. And the Rambam says, how can you make cheshbonot? If you make cheshbon that and they don't come true, the Jews will be disappointed. Look what happened, Shabtai Tzvi era. And here are the famous words of the Rambam. Amru chachamim tipach daitan. And there's a very intriguing tipach ruchan shemachashvei kitzin. That anyone who tries to make cheshbonot, I'll translate it very simply, either they should go out of their mind or they should drop dead. Not a happy, and I'll show you, this is the Rambam, it's in Perish HaMishnayot as well. And then the Rambam ends off, Ele yechakev yamin beklal hadavah kemoshe b'yana. We have to believe in the general idea, there'll be redemption, Mashiach will come, Jews will do tshuva, but everything in due course, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will want it, we can't force the issue. Now, this little Rambam becomes one of my most successful moments in Tzva Hagana Yisrael. What am I referring to? I would tell the story time and again. It's apocryphal. I've told it in class. You have to appreciate what goes on in the army to understand. But you come into the army and the mafaktim, they're always trying to put pressure on you. They're trying to break you as an individual. You have to join. You have to become part of the unit. And by the way, some mafaktim overdo it and it creates problems. But a successful mafakeh has to balance out being a human being and bossing you around so you join. It would be like in communist Russia, the party. The general good is more important than the individual. That's what an army stands on. Without that feeling, you can't have an army. So the Mechayalim are always cursing, maledicting the Mefaktim. It's part of the army. One of the problems you'll see when you read the memoir literature, people became frum in the army because the Datiyim didn't curse for in Volga. But the Chiloniyim, generally, you know, you can't put rules down. There are plenty of Datiyim who curse too. So in the middle of a lecture, I'm lecturing to, excuse me, to 200 Chayalim, and I want to keep their attention, and I say to them, Im tishmuoti tov tov, and ane'agelechem eich lekalel et hamafakedu lekayem mitzvah diyoraita b'daka achat, and b'eitu v'na achat, and they jump forward, they get all excited. I continue the lecture. Okay, and I chayav lechem et sod hazeh, hakunz hazeh, and it's very simple. Here I am, everyone is cursing the mafakeid, and I'm saying under my breath, tipach rucham shel mechashvei kitzim. Mefakeid shouts at me, Chayal, Rakefet, Matam Amalel, what are you muttering? Lomei Torah HaMefakeid, Yafeh, Tamshich, continue to curse me, I'm learning Torah, right or wrong? Tipach Rucham, Shemach HaShvei Kitzim. Let me tell you, many an army audience, they remember nothing of what I said outside of that wisecrack. Now, you'll see the same thing, Perish HaMishnayis to the Rambam, Da'akdamala Perik Chelek, Hayesod HaShneimasa in his Hakdama. Yemot HaMashiach, Vohu LaHaminu LaMeit SheYavo VaLeYachshov SheYitachev VeIm YitMameya HaKelo VeLo Yashim Lo Zman VeLo Yaseh Lo Sfarot BeMikrokot Lo Tzi Zman BiYatov VeChachamim Omrim Tipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. A Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rekelech, Daf Tzadi Zion Amid Bet. So you see, this wasn't just a one-time concept that the Rambam mentioned, here it is in the Mishnah Torah, here it is in the Perush HaMishnayot. And that's why when you see all these books, I see they're giving out here a whole pile of the end of days. You ask me a book like that, I would tell you it's forbidden to write a book like that. Absolutely forbidden to publish. Allah had kama v'kama, forbidden to distribute. So this is the Rambam, and I have a infinitely more powerful answer, but this Rambam is the basis of all our thinking. Now, I also want to mention to you, and this I've mentioned before, but I just want to put it into context, Hilchat Shuva Perikimu Halacha Yud Aleph. And this was that moment back in 57 or 58, where Satman was demonstrating outside the Israeli consul in New York against the Israeli government and getting a lot of attention in the New York Times, the Daily News, the Daily Mirror, the New York Post. And right after Shia, we were gathered standing around the Rav. I was still sitting. And one of the wise guys says, Rebbe, what do you feel about these demonstrations? And the Rav asked the person in charge of running up the Gottesman Library, bring me a Rambam, Hilchat Shuva. 2 minutes later, he came down with the Rambam, and the Rav opened it up. As I said, Perek Gimel Halachi Aleph, Aporish Midah Ketziba, Afal Pi Shaloa Va Averot. And the Rambam said, the Rav said, take this Rambam. Sakma Chasidim, they're not part of Klal Yisrael. Haparish Minat Ziba. Everyone is rejoicing. After the Holocaust, we have a state, we have an army, and they're demonstrating against the state of Israel. Poresh min hatziba, ein lo chelik li olam haba. It's a very powerful statement, and one has to always take that in consideration. When you're fuming and yelling, and you have your own feelings, what is Rov Hatzibur think and act? Maybe I have to reevaluate my viewpoint. Now, I have Talmidim in Satma, and a number of summers ago, I was housed in Borough Park in the Satma area. And I asked a Talmud of mine, how does the Rebbe act the way he acted if I quoted the Rambam? And he solved the problem, and he said to me, what you have to understand, to the Satmurov, to Rabbi Yoel, he was the total tzibur. We are the parshim. All right? I said to him, that's a pretty shocking understanding, because it means the entire Jewish people is not 15 million, but we take it down to give Satmar credit, we'll say, a quarter of a million. I'm overestimating, but let me overestimate. But that's the Satman's viewpoint. I thanked him because it opened my eyes. But halacha lemaisa, haparish min hatzibur, look at the words of the Rambam. I remember the Rav accentuating, even if you don't do a sin, even if you're makpid and cholav Yisrael and glad kosher, parish min hatzibur, ein lo chelek li olam haba. All right, let me go one step further. The Satmar viewpoint, of course, and Alagula, Alhatmura, the Zionist movement, the religious Zionist movement, the Lamdanim, have to, you know, respond. And Hamayan, do you know what Hamayan is? Memory of Shlomo Uman, Machon Shlomo Uman. Shlomo Uman was Professor Uman's son. He was killed. He was a Hesda boy. He was married to a student of mine. If I recall, Shlomit Khan. And he was killed in the first Lebanese war in 1982. And there's a whole institute at Yeshivat Shalavim where he studied in his memory. And they today publish Hamayan. Hamayan has been published for many years already. It's a very unique rabbinic publication. It combines classic rabbinic scholarship with academia, with modern approach, with a feeling for textual correctness, and their issues are very, very fascinating. One time I spoke for Shalavim in America. There was a parlor meeting. I was in America at the time, and they wanted to pay me. I said, no, don't pay me. Put me on the mailing list for Mayan, and I've been on that mailing list until today as a gift. Same thing with Reb Moshe Scherer. You know, I introduced Agudat Yisrael to Russian Jewry. It became a main part of Reb Moshe's life. And he wanted to reward me, so I had an honorary subscription to what was it called? The Jewish Observer, right? The magazine. And I have to give credit to Moshe Scherer's family that they don't deny our relationship. In a memorial volume they put out for him, the first thing you see in the volume are my letters to him. So I have to give credit. They're intellectually honest, way beyond Art Scroll's history volumes, but let it stand at that. So in this issue of Mayan, Gilyon 231, Tishrei Tashap Tafshin Pei, they have a whole article, Halavai, and it's by Harav Yaakov Zisberg, and they bring down a source from the Yalkut Shimoni. You can look it up, or I can give you the source, Yalkut Shimoni on Eicha, Resh Mem Zayin, Remez, I don't know what that means exactly, but the subdivision is Tat Ra Lach, Tuf Tuf Resh Lamet Chet. And it's a whole Socha Tiskar. You'll get all the sources, Eicha Gimel, Pasik Zayin, and Beit Yisrael Yoshvim Alad Masam Vayetamu Ota, a Pasik in Yecheskel. And the Yalkut Shimoni says, Oma HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Halavai Yehon B'nei Ami Be'eretz Yisrael Af Al Pi Shemitam'in Oso. And if you recall, the Vayoel Moshe, with the title of the Satmar's classic volume, Vayoel Moshe, B'nai Yisrael, how can you go in Aliyah, Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlin Levetim Trefat, Bola Bilat Asuret, who are your neighbors, etc. And here's a fantastic part. Halavai, Sheyahon B'nai Ami Beretz Yisrael, Af Avpi Shem Metamin Osam. And I'll tell you, Halacha L'maisa, not that the Medrash needs any proof, it is absolutely correct. What am I talking about? Very simple. Take the assimilating Jews in America. Intermarriage, no marriage. Take a look at all these famous names who work under Biden. Some of them who worked under Trump. Not all, but some under Biden all. What will remain with their children 50 years from now? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Unless a miracle happens, one in a thousand, that the kid will be picked up. There was John Foster Dulles. Remember the name? Sonei Yisrael, Secretary of State, forced us to pull back after 56. His great-nephew was learning in Mir. Turns out his brother, intermarried a Jewish woman, and a generation or two later, a kid checked his roots, found out he's Jewish, al pi halacha, and sought out what it means to be Jewish. A kid, a great nephew, take a look at Trotsky, a miracle. Trotsky, communist, no God. All right, later Ford splits within the communist system. His grandson, one of the founders of Kiryat Arba, of Chevron, went back to the original name, Bornstein. Could you imagine? Forget about Trotsky, went back to the original family name. But those are exceptions that prove the rule. In Israel, yes, North Tel Aviv, Dizengoff, all that goes with it, but so many wake up, the second generation, the third generation, simply being in Israel, willy-nilly, it brings you to question, to ask, look what the outreach is doing here, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Dizengoff Center. Thousands upon thousands coming out to hear Shofar, Ne'ila, Kol Nidre. There's a lot that can be done, and a lot that's being done. And this Midrash is very powerful. Halavai sheyehu banai imi beretz Yisrael, afal pi shemetamim alto. And it's a beautiful, beautiful article in Mayan, and it adds to our feelings here. Yes, we have problems, and a guy like Rakefet commanded it last Wednesday, I think it was, that they interviewed me. Inside, I gave a 45-minute interview, a whole paper, a serious paper, citing Chazal, etc., on why I support Smotrich and Ben Gavir. Okay, fine. I don't know, part of the pay, how many seconds did they take out of it? 11 seconds?
11.
No, the video, but there's a whole article, which the article is fine, it's good, it's for their purpose, why support. But in my talk, I said clearly, it's the only, in my opinion, the only religious party. So everyone goes, how good it is, Israel's not religious, Shas not religious. Absolutely. I showed what they're over. Mechemet Mitzvah, Sota, Daf Mem Dalet, Rambam, Perek Zayin, Hilchot Malachim. How do you not educate your sons to serve in the army? Kala and Chatan, the open Mishnah. I mean, either we accept Torah or we laugh at Torah. Which is it? You want to be a Ben Torah? I'll start a campaign. I want every Mechal Shabbos kicked out of the army. I'll pee din, maybe I'm right. All right, Morty, you'll make a case that it's Bikuach Nefesh. If we kick them out, the army will be too weak. Then I had another point. Oh, these guys, two people interviewed me. One of them is going to be a Chavek. I was very impressed by him, by the way. He was head of Bnei Akiva Olami, and now he's 14th on the list, and very impressive. And the perfect English, I said, I can speak Hebrew, I can speak English, I can speak Yiddish. Which language do you want? English. They're appealing, they're using me for the Anglos, okay? And he understands English is perfect, accented but perfect. And he told me, he, as head of Bnei Akiva, was traveling all over the world. He had to master English perfectly. So I saw here, I want to ask another question. Tell me. Are you obligated to teach your children the core curriculum? Yes or no? Abe, it's an open Gemara. It was in the news last week. Kedushin Daf Chavtet. Avada, Umanut. And if you don't teach your child Umanut, what does the Gemara say? List him. No? Charlie, what happened last week? Tell me. Satma. $8 million fine. You have any idea? David, are you from New York originally?
Connecticut.
Do you know what's going on in New York with the gubernatorial race?
What's going on?
Ah, g- go online, you'll see Kol Kore from Gedolei Rabbanim, vote for Zeldin, vote for this one, because they won't force any secular studies on our students. Look into Yeshiva World News today, you'll faint. Wow, Kol Kore, it's against the halacha. And particularly in Israel, you control, you have the chinuch mamach lidati, no outsider can interfere. Happened, one of my machatenistas is one of the big shots. She's on the committee, you saw her name, Schlissel. Her daughter's married to my grandson. The head of it, Brandeis, Rabbi Doctor, his wife is best friends with my middle daughter. They head up chinuch miyuchad in Michlala. You'll set up a committee and no one out, not everyone has to be self-perpetuating committee. You know what that means, right? No one can interfere. And they determine, and you can have textbooks. Are you a mathematician, Abe, by any chance?
I have a first degree in mathematics.
Okay, so write a textbook. I'm sure Mamatati has it, teaching mathematics, a 60th, a 50th, or a 40th. What am I talking about? Truma. Media writer, one little sheaf, potters a field of 10 million. But a generous guy, you give 1/40th. A guy like me, not so generous, 1/50th. The cheapskate is 1/4th. But you teach the kids. We finish a lila. All right. I also dealt with democracy and Judaism. And I give you a simple example. We're living in Israel, we had tremendous problems that ached my heart out. That's with the chametz on Pesach. I tremble. I mean, this is what went on. Dusgate, the Mon and Levin, Horowitz, Chametz, the hospital. A Jew has to go into a hospital. He has to feel no problem with chametz. He has enough problems with his health. So now it's going to go to the Supreme Court. I hope that by Wednesday we'll have good news. And they'll make it clear that there can be no chametz in the hospitals, and it'll be challenged by the labor card to believe what became of the labor movement. And they'll challenge it. Fine. I'm a judge in the Supreme Court. The rule should be very simple. You don't have to be religious to rule this way. Yes, according to democracy, chametz should be allowed in. According to Judaism, it should not. This is a conflict. In this conflict, we rule. Judaism wins out. The concept of not eating chametz on Pesach is more important to us as Jews than the democratic element. Morty, when did the Supreme Court rule like that? The guy who's so distant from Yiddishkeit, I don't know if he is honored with mafta, he would know what the word mafta means. Aaron Barak, head of the Supreme Court, was a question of importing meat. The law is that you can only import kosher meat. So they went to court, democracy. He ruled the concept of kosher meat is so important to Jews that that's more important than democracy. And I told the story yesterday, I'll repeat it again. You want to know how important not eating chametz is? How many of you heard of Shamir? Again, I had a shock this morning. I asked the guard who's Russian. I told him 10 o'clock, a very important person is coming. Yosef Hatzadik Mendelovich. He didn't know who I'm talking about. I said, do you remember the attempt to hijack the plane in Leningrad, 1970? Well, he wasn't born yet, perhaps, but he was born 3-4 years later. He didn't know what I'm talking about. So, you talk, Russia, chametz. Bezalel Schiff was a Chabadnik from Russia who got out in this, if I recall correctly, in the 70s. And he went out of his way, we have to help the Jews that come out of Russia, we have to help them in Israel. And he met with the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, call your organization Shamir. Shomrei Mitzvot Yotzei Rusia, Shamir. It was on Rehov David Yellen, right, not far from the Shuk. It had a school and a yeshiva and an office. And he wrote a memoir. And one of the stories he tells in his memoir, everyone knew that he had Jewish content and Jewish feeling, but he lived in constant fear of the government. And one day he gets a notice that the head of the whole area, the communist, what would you call the leader, the proletariat, give me a word for the head of communism in a specific area. Do you have a word for it? The governor, the director general, and this is a Jewish woman. And he gets a hazmana that she wants him to come to her office at 8 o'clock in the evening, after work hours. Comes in the evening, the guards let him in, he shows a hazmana, comes into her office, she closes all the doors, the windows, and he's shivering. And she says, you have to promise me you will not tell anyone about our meeting. I promise. Please, can you please get me 3 kilo of matzah for Pesach? And she says, wrap it up. No one should see what you're delivering. Well, what does that tell you? Not eating chametz on Pesach. Today when they question Jews coming out of Russia, were you Jewish? Aren't you Jewish? One of the proofs that you're Jewish, my grandmother and mother never ate bread, only matzah on Pesach. Okay, so there's a lot to be said for what the Merkas Rav crowd has come up with that beautiful Midrash, Ein Hachinami. The words are beautiful. The Yakut Shimoni, Halvai Yiyu B'nei Ami Beretz Yisrael, Afalki Shemitamim Ota. Okay. Now I want to go back, and I want to trace what made Satma Satma. Why did they think like that? Why did they act? What did they introduce? How did they change America? What really happened between Lubavitch and Satma? And we're going to recall and give you sources on some very difficult moments that made the Israeli news, not just the news, the television, made the American television, not all of it so happy and encouraging. Satmar introduced into the United States the concept of fighting, of I'm right, you're wrong. There's no middle ground between us. It didn't exist before. You might want to say it didn't exist before because Jews were not really committed to Torah. But part of the Western world, there is a concept of respect. Years ago, when Gruss and the Jewish Agency, money, the reform, the conservative, it doesn't happen today. Every year, there had to be an outing around Israel sponsored by the JNF for the future rabbis. And the idea being they should know what JNF is doing, so when they'll have to raise funds for the Jewish National Fund, they'll understand. And this involved Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox all going together. You couldn't split off, or you would lose your funding from the Jewish Agency. And at that time, I don't know today, for every kid in BMT, every kid in Gruss, money was given for the Jewish Agency. Reform, Conservative took over. You have to respect them. So we'd go on these outings, and here were Reform rabbis, Conservative rabbis, and I would be going, and Rabbi Miller, earlier times, Rabbi Strick, and here you're dealing with Reform, Conservative, always like a gentleman, never fighting, never yelling, never shouting. It's a public thoroughfare now. We're not dialoguing on the Baha Hashem Zu Halacha. All right. And that's, the Rav taught us that. The Rav said time and again, and you'll find it in my work on the Rav, and it's, again, I caution you, anything about the Rav, it's not Rakefet, it's the Rav speaking. I've now been corrected twice that I made a mistake. It's the Rav talking. You're correcting the Rav on his own biography. You understand? His own autobiography. All right. People are people, but I'm just saying it, be aware. And I quote the Rav, Reverend, never did I speak down, never did I argue. But with respect, you see his relationship with Rabbi Shubo. And remember, the Rav wouldn't go in when they honored him in his shul. The Rav sent the letter, but he couldn't go into his shul that has mixed seating. The Rav couldn't go in for his funeral. He stood outside. And look at the results. Rabbi Shubo's grandchildren are Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, living in Yerushalayim. Look at the results. Look at it. Look at it. I think it's his great-granddaughter or granddaughter. She's 4, 5 children. The top woman runner in Israel. When every award couldn't participate in the Olympics because this was on Shabbat. So you see, the Rav has a very good point there. I was very friendly with Rabbi Teddy Friedman. Doesn't mean we agreed, far from it. In the public debate, I chopped his head off. I really, you know, I write about it in Washington. I made people from, with one head chopping. But on an individual level, we were buddies. Enoch Inami. And I'll just mention one concept, and then I want to go back and trace it historically. In the United States, in the, I would say, the 60s, mid-60s, there was a tremendous issue of AID. Science had advanced, and any lady whose husband was infertile, didn't have a proper sperm account, this is not it's not late koach gavra. It's not that type of problem. The man functions sexually normal, but the sperm cannot engender fertilization of the egg. Now, science had a solution. AID. What does AID mean? So I don't want to mention a name, obviously. I knew about Tshuva. Tzaddik, a very well-known medical doctor. And he told me, when he was in medical school, he was a poor kid, not at all religious, and he supported himself by donating sperms to a sperm bank. So, you know, go and figure out. He did this for about 4 or 5 years. He may have fathered hundreds of children. Who knows? So AID, wow, the woman can be impregnated and have a child, and the problem is solved. The husband and wife go on living together. There's no issue of adultery here, at least in the physical sense. And there are problems. I'll give you a simple problem. You're a Kohen. Here you have a son. No one in the world knows that it's AID. Kid, is he a Kohen or not? The sperm may not even be Jewish, but in no way is he a Kohen. Rav Menashe Klein, I spoke about this years ago, has tshuvah on it, others have tshuvah. It's no happy solution because it's embarrassing. But the whole concept of AID, a woman who can't have children, Sari Menu, we see what she goes through, Rachel Menu. So, Rivka, see what they go through. You can solve the problem. Rav Moshe was matir. The Satmar Rav considered it mamzerut. All right, you have a machlokes. You can have a, we spoke yesterday about civil marriage. We spoke yesterday about mitzitza bepen or a tube. By the way, Charlie, yesterday I showed a picture of what they used at the time Rav Simcha Folkirch in Germany to do the mitzitza, the pipette that they had at that time. A picture that appeared a number of years ago, quite a few years ago already, almost 20, in Jewish Action. And Rav Simcha thought, so fascinating. Yeah, you have a machlokes. In America, Reb Moshe Feinstein, his phone would ring all night. They haunted him. Chassidim, it's a concept. My Rebbe said, my Rebbe is absolutely right. No one else understands, no one else knows. My Rebbe had to do a chakaydish. Reb Moshe had to change his phone. There were other machlokot where they would call the house and tell your wife, your husband was just killed in a car crash. I mean, these are valid, absolutely correct stories. Other people, they get endless subscriptions to magazines and they'd be billed for it. In Israel, you had Satmar and Bells, where pornographic literature arrived at the homes of Belz Rabbanim. And this was introduced by Satmar. Very extreme. We didn't have that before in the United States. I believe we don't have it today. But the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, I'll paraphrase, Milchemet Mitzvah. Now, how did this begin? And here I want to introduce you to a very fascinating volume that I have a very warm spot in my heart for, as I'll explain. The Hasidic Community of Williamsburg by Solomon Pohl, P-O-L-L, published 1962. There's another volume in Hebrew which covers the same period. It's the last volume that Reb Yaakov Katz published, the famous Rabbi Dr. Jacob Katz, Dean of Hebrew University or President, whatever title. I davened with him every Shabbat. I got Birchat Kohanim from Reb Yaakov Katz. He was of German origins, a little man, skinny, short, knew Kol HaTorah Kula, endless, endless general knowledge. And the last volume he published, Hakera Shelo Nit'acha, published by Shazan, 1995. And the title speaks for itself, The Breach That Was Never Healed, That Was Never Sewn Together. This was Reb Yaakov Katz. The story is, it was a master's thesis of one of his students. And Reb Yaakov Katz encouraged him to work on it more, develop it into a PhD, and publish. And the student got involved in business, making money, and he put it aside. So Reb Yaakov Katz took it, and he developed it further, PhD, and didn't need the PhD, but on the level of a doctorate, and he published it, Mecca Shazah published it, you're going to go downstairs now? 1995. But I'll quote from Solomon Pohl, and I'll tell you why Solomon Pohl's volume is so dear to me. In my first shul, my first congregation, Lower Marian Synagogue, I was the second rabbi, 1961, 1962. It was not an easy year for me. I was a kid out of yeshiva, and no one ever prepared us for human reality. I don't know if you can be prepared, but they do give more courses today in YU, psychology, sociology, I believe. And it was a very, very hard year. as you know, I was re-elected by a vote of 9-7 on the Board of Trustees. Now, Sal and Ruth Pohl, Zichronon Levracha, were my congregants that year. He was teaching at the U of P, and they lived in Lower Merion, and they were just wonderful people and very kind to me. He was a Holocaust survivor, made it to America, Hungarian origins, and went on to get a doctorate. I believe it's from the New School of Social Research of Columbia University that he got his doctorate. His wife, if I recall right, was American born. And they were just wonderful people. I believe they have children, or some of their children live in Israel today, and I recall their memory fondly. Now, the Hasidic community at Williamsburg, chapter 2, the structure of the Jewish community in Hungary. And here you come to the roots of what motivates Satmar, and you come to the problem that haunts us until this very moment. And where does it begin? It begins in Germany. And I lectured maybe 20 years ago in great detail on this topic in the context of the German community. It begins in Germany. Germany was the first country where Torah was discarded, the Reform became very powerful, everything was thrown away, karbonot, kashrut, tarat mishpacha, and as we said yesterday, even Brit Mila, Abraham Geiger. A miracle happened that there was a Jew in Germany by the name of Rav Simcha Rafael Hirsch. Rav Hirsch becomes Rabbi of Frankfurt, if my memory is correct, 1851. When he became Rabbi of Frankfurt, there was barely a minion of Jews who still put on tefillin. Rav Hirsch describes the mikveh, an ancient mikveh, old, dirty, I quote Rav Hirsch, in an alleyway fit only for the passage of swine, end quote. And this is where Jews went to mikveh. Well, you all know Rav Hirsch created a return to Judaism that ultimately reverberates until this moment. He was the first one. It's called Neo-Orthodoxy because it's not the same shtetl type orthodoxy. It's an orthodoxy that embraces the modern world, Torim, Derech Eretz, and all that that implies. And Rav Hirsch was so successful that we can actually say our next door neighbor, Machon Lev, is a direct result of Rav Hirsch, and even Yeshiva University, to a certain degree, is a result of the Hirschian school of thought. Now, in Germany, in Prussia, to be more exact, by the 1860s, 1870s, they become more liberal and accepting of Jews and want to give Jews equal rights. In these countries, not like America, but like Israel, the government supported religious institutions. You pay taxes here, Baruch Hashem. We pay, I've paid over the years, I don't know, it must be $1 million worth of taxes. That money gives you a police force, an army, it gives you hospitals, it gives you education, it gives you schools. The same thing in Germany. Now, the Prussian government didn't want to get involved. Who's the Jew? Where's the synagogue? In every community, they said the Jews have to organize and present their credentials to us. We have this shul, that shul, a mikveh, shchita, so many people employed, and the government would have a certain standard, a certain, would have a chart, so many people, so many institutions, they get so much money. Fine. Rav Hirsch was very upset by this government law, because it meant that the Orthodox have to sit with the Reform. And he partitioned the Prussian government to enact the law that you can have more than one Jewish community in any given city where Jews live. By 1876, I believe it was, the Jews, the Orthodox Jews, were powerful enough that the government passed the law. It's called by its German name, Austritt. Am I pronouncing it right, Charlie? Austritt. Walk out. And the Orthodox had the right to walk out and form their own communities. And this gives birth to the problem that haunts us until today. That which unites us is more important than that which divides us, or the opposite. In America, we have shed blood over this problem. You all know synagogue council, mixed board of rabbis. I've written about it in three different volumes. I've written about it in Revel, in Silva, and in my work on the Rough. And this problem, we don't have a black and white answer. Where do you draw the line? And we struggle. It began in Germany. As a result of Austritt in Germany, you had in every city two Orthodox kehillot. You had one that walked out, the Hirschian point of view, Breuer, that point of view. You had another one that was called the Gemeinde, the general community. No need to walk out, the Würzburger Rav, Rav Zalikman Bamberger, Rav Zalikman Bamberger, you think in Hebrew it's in Yitzchak Dov Bamberger. He said, as long as the general community supports the mikveh, the shechita, there's no need to walk out. No one's telling you to change the shul, to turn it into a reformed temple. And you had very famous rabbanim on either side of this debate. Hildesheimer Seminary, publicly they never took a black and white stand, because their students, like, why you? We never were one type. In my time in YU, I remember when the Cheirim came out in 1956 against the Joint Board of Rabbis, against the Synagogue Council. So the students were divided. I remember very well one classmate of mine, don't believe he's alive today, telling off the Rav that you're too lenient. We should be against the Reform. And that same classmate lady became a rabbi. Yeah, I believe he had problems with the mechitza in his shul. So this is an open question, not simple at all. And in Germany, Austritt, that became a guiding light for the Orthodox in Hungary. Now, what's fascinating about Hungary, it's the Hungarian Jew is not Mimin Echad, the religious Hungarian Jew. Look at the map. Part of Hungary is near Germany and near Austria. They obviously were more open, more liberal, more integrated into Hungarian culture. Another part of Hungary was near Poland, Galicia, Czechoslovakia, Romania. They obviously were infinitely more Hasidic. What's fascinating, and you can see it both in Pohl's book and Katz's book, both the more liberal and the more extreme, I'm using popular words, of the Orthodox world in Hungary united and cooperated, because Reform came into Hungary and they were appalled. The biggest part of Reform was what they called Neolog. And Neolog, you should know, was nowhere near as Reform Judaism in Germany. It was much closer to what we called in my time conservative Judaism. That type of conservative Judaism doesn't exist today. But I would describe it as outside of the mixed seating, and some synagogues with an organ, the davening was almost classic. Kabbonot was not abolished. They used an Orthodox sitter, although later on there's a Neolog sitter. But there was a tremendous split. And here you have to come back to Hungary. Who built Hungary? Who kept Hungary moving? Enlightenment, assimilation, intermarriage, all that's happening in Germany. Who kept Hungary solid? They fought it off. That in Hungary, even where there was reform, it was Neolog. And here you come to the Chatam Sofer. And there's no question that Rav Moshe Seifer until today plays a tremendous role in a good part of the Torah world. And all of you know, and again, we've lectured on it extensively, but decades ago, he took a Mishnah in Allah, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. And what that means is that the prohibition of eating from the new crop of grain before Chol HaMoed Pesach is a Torah prohibition. And that's what it means. And by the way, the basic shot is really, it's a prohibition all over. It's not something mitzvah taluya ba'aretz, but even in America, and this was the Baron Soloveitchik's tremendous battle that he introduced Yashan into America, and he suffered because his son claims in his writings that the Telza in Chicago didn't go along with him. They're Mekil. Yeshal Milesmoch, the Bach, the Hulu, Mekil. Certainly in Israel, Chadash is an Issa D'Oraita. All right, here we have a different, we may not have a problem because the grain we make bread with is imported from Europe. It's way after. Our grain is better for spaghetti. It's harder. We send it to Italy. We have a tremendous amount of commerce with Italy in the food industry. If you follow what I'm saying, cakes and jellies and there's no limit to what we import from Italy. I wonder if they're eating hummus and tchina and falafel in Italy and importing it from us. That I don't know. But we have a tremendous amount of food import from Italy. So the Chatam Sofer took that Mishnah, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, literally, anything new is forbidden. And if that's the case, any innovation, Neolog, whatever you have, forbidden. Okay. Let me reward you for coming today and tell you about a private conversation with the Rav. When the Rav attended an RCA convention after his wife died, so the boys, the young men, my chaverim, elder chaverim, would gather around him and implore him, Rebbe, we're getting a special deal if we stay through Shabbos, because the conventions always ended on Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They had to go back to their kehillah to preach on Shabbat. If we stay through Shabbos, we get a reduced rate. We're all staying. Join us. He stayed. He's very relaxed. And they could bother him anything from Shas, Peskim, Rambam, Reb Chaim to baseball. They took him boat riding. I think I have a picture. If not, I saw it. I think I have it. They made a copy. He's on a boat with a baseball hat in the lake. They're rowing. So they asked Rebbe, do you think the Chatam Sofer was right in being so extreme? Abe, this is a very loaded question. What do you say? And I want to tell you, like a Reb Chaim Chakira, the Rav didn't reach a conclusion. He said, you know, I can look at it either way. It could be, had we not so isolated the Neolog, we could have continued, and it would have been a much more religious environment in the general Hungarian Jewish community. But then he said, it could be if the Chatam Sofer had not been so adamant, many, many more Jews would have thrown away Shmirat Mitzvot and Dvar Hashem. And they were talking back and forth with the Rav, example after example. And I have to say, we haven't solved that problem until today. It hangs fire. In Israel, we don't feel the problem as much. There's a very simple reason why. We have one destiny here. When the Arabs start killing, they kill you in Ma'ale Adumim, they kill you in Kiryat Arba, they kill you in Dizengoff, Lo Aleinu. We're all caught up with the same problem. So no one yet has suggested, outside of Satmar, that Agudah leave the Knesset, that Shas leave the Knesset, that we have nothing to do with all these people. Yosef, Bavakasha. I'm ending. Your English is good, I gather. Okay, good. Do you have an idea what's going on? You're looking at three continents here.
Wow.
And later it'll go on Wayu Torah. And the people sitting in front of you are some of the finest, the most accomplished people in the world. I don't want to tell you who's sitting here, but take my word for it. All right, I just want to end off. So this question hangs fire. The Rav could not reach a conclusion, but this is Hungarian Jewry, and we'll see what happens in the mid-1800s and how it impacts upon Satmar. So I want to end off the class. First of all, I apologize to everyone around the world. I can't take questions today because Yosef is here and we want to begin the second part of the class in a moment. But
I suppose if I missed the first part.
No, but you can pick it up on YU Torah. But if you listen to Rakepet and YU Torah, you might have to take off 7 years, because it's contagious, and there's over 1,600 self-constructed Sheyura. So I want to end off, what did we do today? We finished off Satna, we finished off, it was a good decision.
Yeah.
Susan, you follow me?
Yes, excellent. Is it being recorded?
Yeah, it's being recorded.
Okay, great.
It's being recorded by me, being recorded here, and being recorded by Jack Levenstein. If you have a photographer, you might want to send someone in to take a picture so that New York, they'll know that Jerusalem exists and great Jews live here.
Absolutely.
Okay,
all
but
right. I'll send someone down.
Send someone down.
Okay.
Okay. So let me finish off. And this Satmar 67, the counter-reaction, the Rambam, the Yalkut Shimoni, and now the history of Hungary to be continued next week. There's Ratan Opein Leyon Koach. Ending off the class, as I've ended off my classes since 1981, we should meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Yosef moved next to me so that they should pick you up. Yomo, where's Yomo? Hi, when we need Yomo, he has disappeared. This has to be adjusted. Oh, perfect. I became a technician. Yosef and I go back many years, to be exact, 41 years, and there's a triple cord that unites us. Number one, I came back from my first trip to Russia, January 1981. A few weeks later, Yosef came back from 11 years in a hotel which he was forced into in communist Russia. The first time he spoke in public, Heichal Shlomo, the Mizrahi women from Canada, this gentleman spoke in Hebrew, and I translated it into English. Okay, that's the first connection. Next, he married a student of mine, Kahatcha Sarusi, from Machon Gold, and Baruch Hashem, Lekovet Ulatiferet, children, grandchildren, and you'll overtake me with the great-grandchildren, but you have a long way to go. Then you'll overtake my brother. With my brother, you have a long, long way to go. Kanayin Hara, Dr. Levy Rothkopf. Then the third connection, well, you're sitting in this room. Do you know where Rabbi Yosef got married? 1 second walk from here. The terrace that is locked off. And I can show you exactly where Menachem Begin stood and where Yitzhak Navon, the president, stood.
And the chief rabbi.
The chief rabbi certainly will be here. But we got a Begin and Navon with all the security. Yosef, I had a terrible experience today. I told the guard downstairs that a famous Russian Jew is coming. He's a Russian Jew. He didn't even know your name. And I told him, do you know about the attempt to hijack the plane in 1970? And he looked at me like I stepped off the moon. Tell us about the documentary, what you put out, how everyone can access it, because ultimately thousands of people will hear this year. And why did you put it out?
Exactly for the reason that people don't know. Some of them still don't remember. And the majority is altogether ignorant for some reasons. As to the Russian Jewry doesn't know its history, for it didn't exist under Soviet regime. You know, it was one of their ways of assimilating us, not to tell us about our history. It's why they don't know. What's ridiculous and ironically is that the Jewish agents and all other organizations don't teach them as well. So for 50 years, you mentioned 1970, that we were arrested, more than 50 years, I expected that somebody will tell the story. And lately, more than that, using the ignorance of people, some people start telling all kind of different stories, telling that they did it, whatever. So it was my challenge to do it myself. Myself, mamish, with my hands. You normally, I am not a filmmaker, not a producer, and not a wealthy man. But, you know, God help me and another friend, a former refusnik for many years, Alexander Osgon, made the film, and people estimate it is a professional and documentary, for we invited people from Lishkat Kesher, from Nativ, and they thought that's true.
But I just want to tell them what Lishkat Kesher is. when, as all of you know, my wife and I worked for the Mossad for 10 years. We lived a double existence. It's not for now, but there are two books written about it. One is in Hebrew, B'nativ HaDemama, you'll meet Malka and Aaron Rakefet, and a guy named Rakefet in his seventh book entitled From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. There are a number of chapters on Russia, and in Rakefet's Rakefet Aaron Chelik Dalid, there's more material. The security clause was lifted. Now, when I say we work for the Mossad, that is correct. It was a branch of the Mossad that dealt with Russian Jewry since 1952. No one knows how long it's been in existence. That was called by many names. The technical name is Lishkat HaKesha, to keep the Kesha, the knot between us, the continuance, the relationship. It's also known as Nativ. Nativ means a path. And that's why the book is called Nativ HaDmama, the silent path, that you can't publicize it. Okay, then that's what Yosef is referring to.
Anyway, it was very important that the professionals estimate it's a true story. And it is nowadays in their library, in the video library. So, but normally people don't look, you know, if you don't remember, you are not looking for that. So I appreciate your initiative to give me another chance.
Okay, so I want to ask you, can they get it on YouTube?
Yeah, sure, I prepared it here. Maybe you will put on your video later on, but it's...
Okay, this is the link that they need to get it on YouTube.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to publicize it both here. And we're going to put it on YU Torah, so that when they hear you speaking, they will know they will know exactly where to go. Okay, so now you'll put it on. Professor Tarigan will take care of it. We are in good hands. Yosef, I've been teaching Torah 63 years. How many people I've influenced, I don't know. I never wanted to leave teaching Torah. And I write about it now. I'm writing on Rav Shmuel Belkin, the second president of Yeshiva University, who no one here knows about. But do you realize how much influence you had on the Jewish world? And I want to tell you a story. This volume just appeared. Hidden Heroes by Pamela Brown Cohen.
Pam Cohen, Union Councils for Soviet Jews.
Exactly. She writes about it.
And she published my book in English.
Right. Let me tell the class what I got out of the book. Here is a lady at home in a suburban Chicago, wealthy suburb.
Skokie.
Father, husband is making a good living. They belong to a Reform temple. Their home is not kosher. They are totally assimilating. If things had gone normal, there wouldn't be a descendant of theirs left Jewish today, except maybe a miracle if Chabad or NCSY picked up someone. She's listening to the radio. She writes it, 1970, and they interrupt with news that an attempt was made to hijack a plane in Leningrad, and so many people have been arrested, mainly Jews. You know where that lady is today? She's in Yerushalayim. I believe she's wearing a shekel. I saw a picture of her.
Yeah, sure.
A shekel, a shomer.
But not Haredi.
No, Baruch Hashem. My wife covers her hair, and my daughters and my granddaughters.
Haredi Tzioni.
But Haredi Tzioni, absolutely. Haredim L'dvach Hashem. If you're not a Tzioni, you're not a proper Haredi L'dvach Hashem. 100%. Yosef, did you ever realize the influence you would have? Tell us here, you suffered 11 years in prison, in labor camp, your stories about Pesach that you made, the Hanukkah, the Yom Kippur that you observed the wrong day, remember?
Yeah.
Because Shabbos, the impact, if anyone with a Jewish heart has to be moved. You can't go on being a human being without Judaism when they hear your stories. And here he's sitting right before you.
Anyway, to put things straight, it's not me. Certainly it's Ribono Shel Olam. And then what we are bringing in this documentary, it was a step, a certain stage of development of underground Jewish Zionist movement in Soviet Union. We were the last one, but there were many, many prisoners of Zion that were arrested in the 30s, in the 40s, tortured, killed, whatever. And finally we had State of Israel, Medinat Israel, and we had like a consequence, in schut of Medinat Israel, we could do that. Not us. You know, understand, the importance is that we have our Medina. You know, I talk to my friends, Haredim Russian Jews. I say, okay, I'm with you in criticism, whatever is going here. But we have to remember, if not the State of Israel, you will still stay in Soviet Union, assimilated and forgotten. It's very important to underline. You know, I'm very critical myself on whatever is going in State of Israel. But we have to understand that it is a value by itself, you know. You can criticize.
Right.
For we would like to improve it. But, and then there was a hero, a leader, Mark Dimshitz, that led the group, that was forgotten altogether.
Now, I want to raise an issue that is as real today as it was 50 years ago, and even before. And I have to tell you, in reading the book, this lady is shocked when she first gets involved in trying to help Soviet Jews. She is absolutely shocked that they're criticizing the government of Israel. We have a problem here. Did you know that the government of Israel was against what you were doing trying to hijack a plane?
Yeah, sure.
You're aware of it?
Yeah.
Do you realize what's happening today with the Ukraine? What they want, arms we should supply, and but Russia, Syria,
yeah.
Russian Jews.
Yeah. And only yesterday, Russia and Ukraine voted in UN, demanding that Israel will be, how to say, out from nuclear weapon. They.
Russia,
united Russia and Ukraine together against
right.
Israel, which is their real face.
Right. And you realize why the Israel was opposed? Do you understand the difficulty we have here?
Yeah.
It's. I can tell you something that's not well known. In my classroom, I've spoken about it. Archives have been opened, and a student of mine went through the archives of the Herzog family, and they found a letter from the Rav to President Chaim Herzog. Are you aware of this?
No, it was
published in Makor Rishon, and then they contacted me, and they found a letter from the Rav.
What year approximately? In the 50s?
No, this is from the 80s, the early 80s. In the election, when Kahana, I think it was 81, was elected to the Knesset,
yeah.
Herzog, as president, had to view every head of every party to decide who he's going to empower to form the government. He met with the Arab parties that would love to destroy Israel, until today they say it openly, and he wouldn't meet with Kahana. So this letter comes to Herzog with the Rav signature. We did a lot of research. Everyone is convinced that it's a forgery. I even have a theory who did it. It had to be someone who had access to the Rav's mail, because the Rav at that point was lo aleinu crippled, and it was his shamashim who controlled him.
But I was told that even then he did remember what Tsugia he read the day before.
Right,
he forgot everything, but it he did remember.
This is this before he was totally out of it. 1985. His last year was December 1985, Hanukkah. Then he couldn't leave Boston. Lo aleinu was met from a mensch. I don't know. We have to be humble. But the letter was a forgery. At least I believe so, and the Soloveitchik family believes. There are reasons why I can prove it, but it's not for now. Herzog answered the letter. And you know what he wrote back? That I can't accept Kahana because the Russians are watching and the Arabs are watching. And I'm worried about what will happen to the Jews in Russia and in the Arab lands. So you see the difficulty Israel has. You know what my answer is? I say what Kahana did, the demonstrations, you know, it was fabulous. He woke us up. He ran after, you can't believe it. The Russian consul in New York, on Park Avenue, he ran after Russian cars. They were throwing cucumbers and tomatoes at the... Now, Israel had to deny it has anything to do with it. Could you imagine how that would affect the Jews in Russia? On the other hand, Kahana had to do what he did. I can't oppose him on that level. I think he woke us up to the issue of Russian Jewry.
With your permission, I'll tell you a story. When I was released in 1981, I was invited to see America, to meet American Jewry, and I met Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, and I asked him to ask the yeshiva Bochrim to take part in demonstrations. So Rav Moshe Feinstein told me, you know, I am a former Soviet Jew. I know that you cannot oppose the Soviet government, for it will make only worse to the Soviet Jewry. I told Rabbi, the time has been changed. We are in that bad situation. You can't spoil anything just to save us. It's very important. And he told, there was other people around him, he told, Mendelevich in this issue is more knowledgeable than me. You are my poisek. If you say it should be done, I order all yeshiva Bochrim to go on the demonstrations.
Oh, beautiful. So I can tell you, I have a major piece that's ready for publication on rabbinic authority. And I can tell you the greatest embarrassment in my life was exactly this period when the word went out that the religious Jews, Halpern, from the glasses, the wrestler, the rabbi, the Talmud Chacham, Rafal Halpern, he contacted Lishkat HaKesher. I want to make a demonstration in Bnei Brak. Aryeh Kroh, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, he headed up this division of the Mossad that he was my handler in English, Hamafil Shalei. I revere the man's memory. Second to the Rav, I never met anyone that I admire so as Aryeh Kroh. Second to Rav, second to Moriah Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov, Halevi Soloveitchik. So Aryeh Kroh says to me, Harav Nakeset, Ani Masmich Otcha Liyot Ish HaKesha Beineinu Levein Halpern. V'tizkor, remember, give him the rules. Our rules were you don't criticize the Soviet Union. Israel is not out to criticize. Who have you? We want reparation. Jewish families can go back to their homeland, go back to their family. That's what we want. Well, I met with him. He took me. He had two restaurants then. I think they were the only kosher restaurants in Dizengoff. One Fleischik's, one Milchik's. Took me out to lunch. I was impressed. This is Rafal Halpern. And when he wants to do something, etut, he has money and influence and power and connections. And they sent Rabbi Kites from America to tell, I was so embarrassed, we don't demonstrate in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you know. Times have changed. You have to ask the experts. I write about this and I show
stories. So mention the story as well.
Ah, unbelievable.
It's a first-hand story.
First-hand story, Reb Moshe. Now, I want to touch upon something else that you alluded to. And almost everyone in this room is an Oleh. And, you know, Ida Nudel, the famous Ida Nudel, I trust everyone knows, I'm talking about that little lady who suffered so. Joan Fonda went to visit her. I mean, you have to give credit, even a non-Jew, the feeling, the Mesirat Nefesh. She was very unhappy in Israel, very disappointed. And, you know, there's the dream and there is the reality. And I think what you said is very, very important. No one can be more critical than Israel than we who live here. But we have to thank God we have a state, we have elections, we have religious parties, we have to deal with the non-religious. And I always feel...
We have the army.
Baruch Hashem, if not for the army, we couldn't be sitting here now. People here from Mal Adumim, there was just a pigua in Mal Adumim, Kiryat Arba.
I managed to serve in IDF after being released.
Kol HaKavod, I know, someone wrote to me, he met you in IDF. I did basic training at the age of 38, Chayal Mitztayim, at the 10, 15 years I lectured in the army. But what you say is very correct. We have to be happy, but part of it is our fault. Why didn't we come in Aliyah? 1880s, 1890s.
1948.
Right. Why are we criticizing? Had we come, it would have been a different state.
It is. We criticize for love. Uh-huh. You know, if you are ignorant, if you are neutral, you say it's beautiful, that's so. But it is ours.
Right.
And as far as it is ours, it make us pain. Bring us pain. It reflects the real passion and love if it makes you pain.
Right, right, exactly. We care. It's like a child. It's like...
You're a child.
Exactly, exactly. And let me ask you another question. Did you ever interact with Ida Nudel? It always hurt me that she was upset with the reality here.
When I was arrested, no movement had been existed at that time, so we never met. But later, when she was released, we met and cooperated. And I tried to explain her but they couldn't do anything. There were a lot of conflicts, and you know.
Could part of it be the fact that she was not religious? She didn't have that religious feeling. B'sach HaKol, with all our problems, Shabbat is Shabbat, Kashrut is Kashrut. We have here beautiful, beautiful people, Yehuda v'Shomron. What right. You see there, I have many grandchildren living in the Shomron all over, and I see, they're minyanim, they don't know what life is like. They go to minyan in their building, mincha, marev, outside in the street, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos.
I will tell something about myself, and it will maybe answer your question about Ida Nudel. People ask me, how was my absorption in Israel? I thought, no absorption. To begin with, that I spoke Hebrew. But more important, people come, look for a community to whom to adjust, I never looked for my community. I had my community. Torah, Mitzvahs, Eretz Yisrael, I found it immediately, and I immediately became a part of it. People that are looking still with whom to be together. It brings certainly this kind of conflicts,
Well said. And I always felt bad that she came here after such a struggle, but never found herself. It hurt. On the other hand, you take a look, Yuli Edelstein, who I smuggled in, you have no idea, I was a pauper, and suddenly Arye Kroll gives me this, had to be 85 already, Arye Kroll, our second trip, We were there three times, but I also, I sent over 300, Mark and I sent over at least over 200 people, could be even more. You know, it's our whole process to find people who have a dual citizenship, know how to keep secrets, happily married, can teach Gemara, and to send and to prepare and to brief. So I came in with thousands of dollars, which, with Tanya Zichrona Levracha, we bought in the Beryuska, the foreign currency shop, expensive whiskey, and I had foods that they gave me in London, the Mossad over there gave me cheese and salamis, all glatt kosher, and she used it to bribe, the liquor to bribe the guards to send in the kosher food for him. And here you have an example. Look what he, if someone would have told me, Yuli Edelstein will one day be one of the most important people in Israel, and Toli Sharansky, Natan Sharon, Hayom. Take a look how they conquered. There was a Yuli Stern. I don't know if you remember him.
My closest friend.
So let me tell you about your closest friend. 1981, you know, the cover, I'm from Queens, I'm speaking, and I pulled it off, you know, Baruch Hashem, Queens, this, that. Only to a few people I was to say, Drishat Shalom me Shmuel Chatzar. Who is Shmuel Chatzar? He was at the International Book Festival. He headed up the Israeli desk. So all the refusnikim knew him. So the minute I said, Drishat Shalom, Mishmul Chatzar, they knew where I was coming from, that the rest is a bluff. He never heard that. Later, there's a demonstration for you, and my wife is making posters, etc., and he comes into our house to pick up the posters. My wife is an artist. And he faints. He says, what are you doing here? You live in Queens. Mata Sekar. He said, I live in Queens like the Chinaman lives in Queens. I said, this was Yuli Stern. These people so integrated, it was beautiful to see.
I will point out maybe something else. If you were important, a leader in Soviet Russia, and you come to be again something prominent, it is a mistake. As we say, Ein Malach, Shaliach Leda.
Ein Malach, that's specially hot.
You made it in Soviet Russia. Okay, now you are regular. It was helped me to get adjusted to Israel. I never felt that somebody is, that I deserve something, you know. Okay. I'm a regular. I did there whatever I could do. For it was my challenge. Here in Israel, I'm a regular. It is very, very, very healthy approach.
You're absolutely right. And I'm going to tell you a little story that happened in this very building. A lot of American rabbis come in Aliyah. One of these famous American rabbis, his children studied here, his children taught here, his grandson studied here, and he would daven here as a Shani Yom Kippur. One Yom Kippur, he grabs me like this. He says, Rabbarin, when I davened in America in my shul in Brooklyn, 1,000 pairs of eyes were upon me. When I daven here, no one looks at me. So I said to Rabbi Horowitz, let him speak, Ne'ilah, be mechaber him to speak, he needs. But you should know, a year later he was back in Florida, a rabbi in a senior citizens complex, and that's where he died, but all his descendants, almost all, live here. So I owe
him. Enayim Hashem bo mireshit shana ad acharit shana. It's the most important eyes that are following you, more than important than the thousands there in Golis.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So I want to say to my dear students, both sitting in front of me and both listening across the world, this was a moment in time, and I want to end off, I want to tell Reb Yosef something else. You don't know how your getting out of Russia gave myself and my wife the greatest mitzvah that we have, okay? Now I'm going to tell you. I write about it. Who got you out? Ultimately, it was
Elie Bronfman.
The Bronfman family, the World Jewish Congress. I was over.
You know what's Jewish Congress? World Jewish Congress is a small office and one secretary. An executive director.
And Yisrael Singer.
Singer, right.
Rabbi Tarek. So when you came out in Bronfman, and you don't know what went on here, they announced on the radio you're missing from labor camp. And everyone was upset, where are you? And a few hours later, we heard that Bronfman, his private plane, and it was
a regular
plane. Who, when did he use a private plane with? Essas?
Ida Nudel.
Ida Nudel. I remember he once used his own private plane. And then you come here. When we were overwhelmed in Russia by the Essas family, Eliyahu, Anya, the children. So Mark and I organized a big committee consisting of two people. I print in Washington, you have a picture. We print Committee for the Release of the Essas Family. I went to America. I met with senators, with congressmen, and I met with Rav Moshe Scherer. But everyone told me, you have to get to Bronfman. I said, yeah, he got out. Yosef Mendelovich. I got to Bronfman. You know I got to Bronfman? Yisrael Singer's niece was my student in Michala.
Yeah.
She got me into her uncle, and we hit it off, and he got to Bronfman, and the Mossad, Aryeh Kroll, I get a phone call, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Pasha Toldot, 1985. Harav Rakefet! I'm on my way to the Kotel. It's an hour before Shabbat. Hitzlachta, anachnu matzdiim lecha. Mossad saluting me. Bronfman is getting Essas out. Sunday, I finished teaching. I used to teach Sunday afternoon. Now I can't teach night. I teach only two mornings a week. I'm older. I don't have that energy in the afternoon.
It's 120.
Amen. The Mossad, I was a pauper. Mossad pays for all the calls. Call Russia, call Essas. I call Essas, and after medavrim kacha, the shamata mashu al yitziat Mitzrayim kacha lason kachat sodit. Ani menasel azu. Who mevin miyad? Who tofeset ze miyad? Lo shamati. Mi yitzei ha nashim hataf hakol kivol shemoshe rotze lo paro. When the phone call is over, and remember, four people are on the phone. I'm on the phone, Essas is on the phone, the KGB is on the phone, and the Mossad is on the phone. You can hear them breathing. The operator asks us, I'll never forget this, the Israeli operator, Yesh Chadashot, Fani Omer, Lo. V'hi omeret li, Tiyena Chadashot Tovot, Al Tidag, Ani Hiklatati Etzeh, A few weeks later, they announce Bronfman with the deal for the vodka. He will not sign $100 million plus deal at that time unless the Essas family is included. And I want them for the World Jewish Congress Assembly.
You know, when I thanked Bronfman for whatever he did, he told me, I am only the straw that break the camel bone, but the most important was your struggle.
Right.
World struggle for Soviet Jewry. He was a decent man.
Listen, if these students can tell the world about what you did for Abba Kolsat and Mora and Matzah and Hanukkah candles, it will create so many more Jews. So, all right, we're shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is, God put us in a certain, achshev shenotzati. I once heard a lot of Torah from the Rav. If God would have created us before our time, we wouldn't have succeeded. But we created a certain period where we can be successful. But as successful as we are, We have to be molded la Kadosh Baruch Hu to remain humble al hanisim va'al haniflat. This was a moment of time. I start thank everyone for participating. I can only tell you next Sunday, Monday, I pick up just where I left off. On Sunday, we pick up with, do you have to eat meat at a Brit Milah? And we go into the whole Hasidic world. You'll see why Reb Menashe Klein is different than Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Monday, we pick up exactly where we ended a few minutes ago. Satmar in America, the connection to Hungary, Austritt in Germany, Synagogue Council, and all that bedevils us until today. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank Reb Yosef.
Again, please, people, friends, watch the movie.
Right.
And give over to other people. It is very important, very educative, very true to life.
Right. And I was going to end off with that. But I want to thank Reb Yosef. I never enjoyed a book more than this little...
Except of my unbroken spirit.
Well, the unbroken spirit. And what about your book on what went on in Russia with the draft? With what do they call them? What's your book called? Not the Maranos. The drafted in the army.
Cantonist.
The Cantonist.
Yeah,
that was your master's thesis.
And now I wrote another book, whatever I did here in Israel after my release.
Ah, wow.
It's called Prisoner of Zion in Zion.
Prisoner of Zion, beautiful. It's almost, that's even better than mine.
Prison for Zion.
In
I
Zion.
See here's David Stoll. Watching us,
right,
one of the leaders of the student struggle for civil jury, always never say prison of Zion, prison for Zion.
For Zion, very, very
Zion
good.
Zion al nati shali shloma sirai.
And you're looking there, the third person, he's listening from Hollywood, Florida, and there's a person listening from Chicago, and there's a person listening from Brooklyn, etc., etc. So I just want to repeat what Rabbi Yosef just said. Pass on the word, and I want to have a schut b'shamayim that I arranged this today, that one day the Ribbono Shel Olam will say to me, over 100,000 people saw the documentary as a result of this moment of dialogue. Until we meet again in health and happiness, let me hear it. Das Vedanya.
Cool too. Bracha v'atzlacha.
And no one can believe you got married here. You think they think I made it up.
On the top of the building.
And it's right there.
There were 6,000.
Right, yeah, a mob, you don't know what was here. They had to limit the people going out to the terrace. The building we came in.